First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
City Council doesn't have Confederate monuments on the agenda for tonight, but one local activist will try again to call for action. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with activist Ben Frazier. Already getting your calls. It's 549-2937. Then later, why Hurricane Ian wreaked havoc on Florida's bee population. Yes, the bees. That's in our Going Green. That and more ahead. But first this morning, protesters demanding the removal of Confederate monuments from public places will once again rally tonight at Jacksonville City Hall. Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jack says he will speak publicly, pressing the council on this issue once again. This even though Frazier was arrested at the last meeting for defying a time limit on public comments. That court case is still active. Ben Frazier joins us now in studio with more about the monuments, his arrest, and a successful lawsuit he helped lead that's forcing the city to draw new district lines. Ben Frazier, good morning.
Thank you very, very much for having us. And a top of the morning to all of your loyal fans out there in Radio Land.
In Radio Land, that's right. And if you're out there in Radio Land, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Lines are open. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. Now, we should begin by saying that we reached out yesterday to Jacksonville City Council President Terrence Freeman. He was not available to appear today, but he has publicly stated that he hopes this year the issue of Confederate monuments in Jacksonville will be dealt with. Ben Frazier, at the last meeting, you were very publicly arrested, handcuffed, dragged out of the meeting. You faced trespass charges, I believe. You're going to speak again tonight on this issue. Tell us what's happened since the last meeting and what your thoughts are about tonight.
Well, the court case has been delayed by another 4 weeks. Bottom line is that it's time for us to light a fire under the posterior of these city council members, and we're tired of them beating around the bush, tired of them playing slow drag and beating around this mulberry bush. They've got to act, folks. It's time for political courage, and here's what we want to see. We want to see some of those city council members have a change of heart regarding their stance. I'm calling on them now to base their decisions and their votes not on partisan, petty partisan, Republican, Democrat positions. That's over with. This is all about right and wrong. This is about spiritual principles. We will either begin to see profiles in courage or more examples of political cowardice. Mama used to teach us about right and wrong. Right now, this council is driving down a dark and dusty country road with no lights on. We're saying, turn your headlights on, City Council. Base your decisions on principles. No longer rely on personal political preferences. We don't care about the Tea Party, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Independent Party. It's time for you to base it on principles and the Word of God. This goes against the grain of these citizens who, on the City Council, they call themselves Christians. I call them out. This is not based on biblical principles. They've got to base this on the Word of God. God hates six things, yea, seven things. One of them is hearts that devise wicked schemes. It's time for this city to repent from tyranny, racial tyranny, oppression, and racism.
You have commented that you being arrested after violating the time limit on public comment rule was a human rights violation and racially motivated in some sense. Do you plan to do the same thing again tonight to try to, you know, to overstep the time limit and potentially get arrested again?
We want to make clear that we will continue to express our First Amendment rights. Ours is not to disrupt for the sake of disruption. This is a tactic that Ben Frazier did not invent. Martin Luther King, John Lewis said, make trouble, good trouble. They crossed the Martin, the Pettus Bridge in Selma. They didn't have permission. They marched in Birmingham. They didn't have permission. They were swept down with high-pressure water hoses. They were also sick dogs on them. They beat them with billy clubs, rode into them on horseback. They did not have permission. Rosa Parks did not have permission to sit on that bus. They told her to leave. She made up her mind not to. I'm saying the same thing. We shall not be moved. We will continue to march, rally, and demonstrate until they remove these monuments. And folks, one day, they're going to do just that.
Now, in addition to the public monument issue, in particular, the large monument in Springfield Park dedicated to the women of the Confederacy, you and other activist groups have been successful in your lawsuit forcing the city of Jacksonville to redraw district lines for members of city council and also the Duval County School Board. A federal judge has seen it your way with multiple rulings. What are your thoughts about the upcoming March elections, which we surmise will feature new lines of power as candidates are at this very moment scrambling and jockeying for position in the wake of your successful lawsuit?
What we have seen is this, and that is that people power can change the political landscape in cities and counties just like Duval. We've seen this progressive movement catch hold. People are starting to change. We see that we think black folks should have some right to greater power. We represent 29-30% of the population. We want our rightful piece of the economic and political pie. We're not looking for anything over and above that. We just want an opportunity because we know that voting also has to do with the allocation of resources. The northwest quadrant of the city has been underserved and marginalized for way too long. They made promises doing consolidation. They broke the damn promises. We want our piece of the pie.
And do you think these new lines, which attempt to unspool what the judge called an attempt at racial gerrymandering, do you think these new lines will take the city some way down that path?
Yes. I don't think it will happen overnight. I don't think it's a wave of the magic wand. I don't think it's a silver bullet. It's not going to happen overnight. But we are at least talking about a change in the black body politic. We're at least talking about a change in the way we do business in Jacksonville. This has been an old boys club for a long time. And finally, in 2023, we're starting to see some change. Again, we don't think it's a magic wand. Will it provide some opportunities? Yeah, we might be able to get a candidate in District 14. I'm hopeful that I can personally endorse somebody there to run. That's separate and apart from the Northside Coalition, I might add.
But now, you're wearing a shirt for people watching on video. We'll have a little video up later today on social media. You're wearing a Northside Coalition shirt that says Ben Frazier, President, Geneva, Switzerland, 2022. You wore shirts, you and some of your colleagues, when you were invited to speak at a committee of the United Nations earlier this year, about your lawsuit challenging Florida's anti-riot bill, HB1.
Yes.
The UN invited you to speak in the context of what they framed as human rights violations, not just in Jacksonville, but in Florida as a whole. So you've taken this message global.
Yes, that is true. But let's connect the dots for those who might not be as fast as some other folks. Let this connect the dots. There is a connection between HB1, our First Amendment rights and violation thereof, as well as these monuments, which, by the way, represent a callous disregard and contempt for human rights. The monuments distort the city's image. They stand in contradiction to the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Why? Because they represent tyranny and oppression in the form of art. These monuments are racism in art form. They rip and tear apart at the very fabric of dignity and equality. They shake the foundation of freedom, justice, and peace. There is a universal declaration of human rights, and it stands in violation of that UN procedure.
It should be noted that Richmond, Virginia, the very capital of the Confederacy, the city that had more Confederate monuments than perhaps almost any other, has removed the last of its monuments. And yet here in Jacksonville, we remain stalled. And so what are your thoughts, folks? 549-2937. Herman is downtown. Herman, you're on the air. Go ahead, Herman.
Good morning, Dr. Ross. How are you?
Thanks for the promotion.
It has been a long time, and still, by the power invested in the city of Jacksonville, you get the honorary doctorate degree.
I appreciate that. Maybe one day I'll make it real when I can afford it, which is probably
It is real by the work you do.
Thank you,
but
sir.
Real quick, I'd like to speak to the process of public comments. I think that the city council has it wrong, and I'm just surprised that nobody has filed a lawsuit, because there's a lot of ambiguity into it. If you follow, and I'm assuming the school board still has 3 minutes to speak to them. And I don't know what the difference would be between the school board and the city council, where you still can get 3 minutes over there, but with the city, you cannot. Secondly, you can, I guess, every week, depending upon who wants to speak, you may get a minute or 3 minutes. That's not consistency. And what if you have so many speakers, you can only get 15 seconds to speak? So something is wrong with that. But a little historicity about this. This all started with Stan Jordan and Billy Park over at the school board, where they would move public comments from 6 o'clock to 6:20, but they guaranteed if anybody who came would still have the opportunity to speak. So I'm just not sure how the council got away with giving you a minute, 30 seconds, where if you go back, you could speak to the council before and after the meeting.
Yeah, thanks.
So I think that somebody needs to file a lawsuit to get down to the bottom of that. But this all started with public comments with Billy Parker and Stan Jordan.
Stan Jordan, that's a name
from the
past.
And it was
the
precursor that any citizen came to speak to their body politic.
All righty, thank you,
they
Herman.
They would give them that route.
Thank you, Herman, for that. And that's some interesting history. Now, Ben, you were arrested because you exceeded the time limit on public comment. Very dramatically, I might add. They didn't even let you take your mobility scooter, which you use. You are dealing with some health issues when they cuffed you and took you off. But what about this? We have asked Terrence Freeman, the council president, to appear on the show, and perhaps he can provide some insight into why they've shortened the time for public comment at these city council meetings. You would guess it's because these meetings can go so late into the night and so many people want to speak that they're giving people less time.
I think the gentleman you just spoke addressed the overarching issue, and that has to do with public comment. But before we go one step farther, let us understand how this country was founded. It was founded on public comment. When they threw tea in the Boston Harbor, that was public comment. Guess, by the way, they didn't have permission to do that. They just did it. The bottom line is, what we're talking about is the public's right to speak out. We must honestly and straightforwardly address this issue as a city council. Stop putting it on the back burner, Terrence Freeman, president of the council, and let's address the issue, period.
What about the fact that, I'll read an email from a listener. Why shouldn't other people with a different point of view than Mr. Frazier do exactly what he does? Break the rules, take over time from others, and not follow the procedures.
They have that as a choice. Understand that I'm simply utilizing the vehicle provided by the people I admire, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who used this direct action, nonviolent disobedience tactic and strategy to get this 1964 Civil Rights Act passed and the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965. It is a vehicle. Am I using it? Yes. Can they use it? If they're ready to go to jail, yeah.
You're not worried about going to jail again?
Not at all. King was not worried about it. He went to jail several times. Martin Luther King and his the Abernathy and Lowry and others went to jail. They laid it on the line. Folks, I'm here to inspire and to encourage people to stand up for what is right. Make up your mind where you will draw your line in the sand. I've made mine up. I'm not suggesting you go to jail, but I am suggesting I'm going to stand up. As for me and my house, we're going to fight for what's right.
Ava on the west side.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm from Arkansas, where in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, prejudice was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I never figured it out until after I went in the Navy. And I found out that there was equal opportunity for everyone, no matter what color their skin or their origin or whatever. And I think that as a 17-year-old, I learned a lesson that stayed with me. Mm. I've lived in Jacksonville since the 1960s, and I can't see it getting a whole lot better. I live on a little street, and I have black neighbors, and they're wonderful people. And there are white people on my street who are also wonderful, and they get along well together. And we're just human. We're not black or white or yellow. We're human. I haven't been able to figure out how there are so many people who don't understand that. And I'll give someone else the rest of my time. Thank you very much for what you do.
Thank you, Ava.
God bless you.
Thank you for that.
I'm moved by that lady's comments.
Gerald in St. Augustine. Hey, Gerald, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning. The only point I'd like to make is everybody knows who Ben is. We know where Ben preaches. We know where Ben lives. We know where the people who support this are. But the people who don't support it are all hiding under caps and scarves and flying flags that nobody knows who pays for. I want to know, who are the people that are stopping this? What are their names? Where do they live? Where do they work?
Well, we don't need to know where people live, but Gerald, I appreciate the call. That's Gerald in St. Augustine. Because, let's talk about this, Ben, racist flyers flying over TIA, Bankfield, anti-Semitic hate messages that have blanketed the city, groups meeting, I believe, over at the Mudville Grill that
yes.
have called you and other activists out by name and in their literature. There is a climate in this city of disturbing hate speech involving race, anti-Semitism, and in this climate is the backdrop for your activism.
The concern is that Jacksonville will become a racial hotbed of controversy. Bottom line, these people have put out a hate list, folks, on myself, Wells Todd, Hope McMath, certain politicians in the city, basically saying it's okay to their political base because we're fighting against what they say is Second Amendment rights, fighting against police accountability. These people are acting ugly, doing ugly things. Our very lives are at jeopardy. I do not want to walk away from this show.
Are you concerned about your safety?
I am very much concerned about my physical safety. Of course, these people are doing ugly, nasty things, putting out a hit list on us. What if they had your picture on there and sent it out to their base, these gun-toting nuts? How would you feel about it? Don't you think I have to be concerned when I crank my car, when I drive here or there? I have family. I have people that I lead. We are all in jeopardy. We are prayerful for our public safety. And right now, we're calling on Sheriff T.K. Waters to ensure the safety of activists who are exercising their constitutional rights. We are very much concerned.
Have you spoken with the police?
Have not spoken with them regarding this issue, but consider this that email. This is it. We're asking the sheriff to ensure the safety of activists who are utilizing their constitutional rights to call for the removal of Confederate monuments. These people have put out a hate list. We are in jeopardy. We are being threatened.
Are you asking for police protection?
I'm asking for police protection. Yes.
Why not go to the sheriff one-on-one and have the conversation?
Well, I haven't had an opportunity to meet with him. I'd love to, and we'll certainly move on that suggestion as early as today to get that memo out.
And lots of calls meanwhile. Let's go to Shamari in Northwest Jax. Shamari, go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning. And thank you for facilitating this conversation. And many kudos to Mr. Frazier and his many accomplishments. And I'm from the Northwest Quadrant. I went to Raines. We cannot agree that Mr. Frazier represents all of the so-called African-Americans in this town, especially in the Northwest Quadrant. And the thing about it is there are many folks in the community that I've sampled, the older folks, the younger folks, the middle-aged folks, I've sampled their opinions, and a lot of people don't agree with all of the dissension and all of the unrest that these actions are causing. My thing is, when I go to Atlanta, I don't go to Stone Mountain Park because Stone Mountain Park is highly offensive to me, those Confederate monuments there. I don't go to the park in Jacksonville. So just because one particular group, and we don't know, of all of the thousands, the tens of thousands of Black folks in Jacksonville, does Mr. Frazier claim to represent all of those folks? Because when one small group is offended, we're supposed to remedy the offense to offend another group. My suggestion is, instead of tearing down these monuments and getting these people all riled up, why don't we just put another monument? Put Thurgood Marshall up in the same park. Put the epitaphs up and tell the truth about the whole story. Let's get the whole truth out there, and let's just equal the playing field like that. I would like to hear his comments.
All right, thanks.
And I should say that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. never represented the masses of Black people. Only about 10% of the people ever supported him. Even in Jacksonville, Florida, Baptist ministers didn't support him. So I don't claim
he was arrested in this area too. By the way, I don't know if people remember this. He was taken to the Duval County Jail.
Right. I don't claim to represent all Black folks either in Jacksonville or in the Northwest Quadrant. But what I'm telling you, what the gentleman just said, was poppycock. And if, dear sir, you could find a way to bottle or bag what it is you just said, you should use it on your lawn to make the grass greener and make the flowers bloom.
Why is it poppycock?
It's poppycock because the bottom line is that Black people, in large part, are against racism. Remember that it's not about Southern heritage or erasing anybody's history. This is about what these monuments represent. They represent racism and equality. Black people are against that. Not overlooking it, sweeping it under the rug, and saying, well, there's just one Black guy talking about this. Listen, bottom line is, we don't like racism. We're standing up, speaking up about it. And if the gentleman doesn't like what we're doing, then he needs to form his organization. But as for the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, we stand up, we speak out against any and all forms of social, racial, and economic injustice. Use what he just said to make your grass green and make your flowers grow.
We shouldn't point out that UNF did poll on this issue. And as I recall, the majority of Jacksons, Duval County residents, are in agreement with you, Mr. Frazier, in that they are okay and they approve of the monuments being removed. They're okay with that, or they support that. Hope in Riverside. Hope, go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa, and good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
I just wanted to call in to support Ben's comments and the overall movement happening in Jacksonville right now to remove all of these monuments. I think, you know, one of the reasons we've been working hard to remove them is because they do prove to be symbols that are rallying points for hate. We saw it in Charlottesville. We've seen it in other communities. And I think we're now seeing that today in Jacksonville. Symbols like the Confederate flag, symbols like the Women of the Confederacy in Springfield Park are now serving as rallying points for far-right groups, hate groups, to be sort of rallying their troops and not only trying to protect those monuments, but now actually targeting individuals within our community. So I think it's important that we stand strong on this. I think we should push against retextualization and simply plunking another monument in the same public space. All that does is really demean the history of the Black community in our city and elsewhere, and that this really is a movement where Black people and white people are standing together. And I think we'll continue to see that grow as the Proud Boys and the Unity Group and the Oath Keepers really sort of dig in here in Jacksonville, which is something that is happening all around us. We see it every week.
Thank you for that. Yeah, these groups have a presence, a strong presence in this region.
I just want to be able to say that there are a number of organizations fighting to see these monuments removed. Take them down, Jacks. Hope McMathwell, Tard, and others are among these groups. And I'm glad to see that the tide is starting to turn, momentum is starting to turn in terms of white folks, black folks, young folks, old folks throughout Jacksonville. It's starting to change, folks. The movement is happening now. This is not just a moment. This is a movement, and it's changing before our very hearts. We need to see the city council have a change of heart. Change, city council, change. Don't be afraid to stand up and tell your constituency you made a mistake. It's time for a change of heart.
Mandy tweets the show, city council is about to have a wake-up call. If they've stalled on monuments, we're going to elect people into those seats that won't stall. If they've wasted our taxpayer money on appeals for redistricting, we're going to elect people that will no longer do that. As I mentioned, we have reached out to the city council president and hope to have him as a guest as we discuss all of these issues in the lead up to the March city elections. That's right, folks. There are elections coming up in March. You get to have a say who you'd like to have represent you as mayor, city council rep, and other elected positions. What are your thoughts? We're going to extend this segment because there are so many calls. 549-2937, Yasina in Arlington. Yasina, how are you? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just want to say, like, this really shouldn't be about feelings. If you take a civic literacy class, a Florida government class, you will see very plainly the Daughters of the Confederacy move to whitewash what the Civil War was about, to put these monuments up, to make it softer and to make the Confederacy something that it wasn't about. And I'm sorry, but the same people who are constantly moaning about liberals who love participation trophies are the ones that won't give up this ghost. It's a lie. And they should be removed from public squares. These folks were against our union, and they fought to destroy the United States of America. And they shouldn't be placed in public squares in a place of honor or remembrance that go against what the United States fought a civil war over. And I guess that's my comment.
All right. Good work. Thank you, Yasina. Thank you for your thoughts. Taking calls from all over the listening area, let us know how you feel. Charles on the West Side. Go ahead, Charles.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Ben, I think that Mohandas Gandhi and Martin and everybody else would be very proud of you. I like your approach, you know. You don't need permission. That is a great rallying cry. But do you think city council is going to even take this further and appeal to would they take this to the Supreme Court?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you're getting back to the redistricting lawsuit. Thank you for that, Charles.
Yes.
Is that even a possibility?
Yes, sure it is. Listen, Frederick Douglass says power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, it never will. It says that if there's no struggle, there can be no progress. Folks, this is not going to end overnight. Do you have any idea how long it took to abolish slavery? As egregious, as ridiculous and appalling as it was, it took hundreds of years. So, yes, they're going to continue to fight, and so too will we. But in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. In the end, we will win.
Have you had conversations with anyone on city council or with the supervisor of elections office about them potentially continuing to fight over redistricting?
The litigation is continuing. There's no need to have that conversation. It's still going on. But with the greater context of what we're talking about in terms of these monuments, which is our focus right now, mm-hmm. we're asking for the members of the city council to have a change of heart. The gentleman said, well, who are these people fighting for the monuments to stay? It's not some gray, nebulous ambiguity with regard to that. It's the city council. Stop trying to point the finger at these people out there in the Jacksonville. It's the city council.
Well, or is it the city council concerned that a minority of their constituency, but one that votes in every election, could vote them out if they take a public stand on the monument issue?
Remember that my position made clear today is that they should base their vote on principles, biblical principles, the word of God, I might add, and not on personal preferences. Personal preferences change just like the temperature and any way the wind blows. People assume certain positions just because they want to be accepted. People accept personal positions because they don't want to see the negative consequences. I'm telling you, do like your mama taught you. Do what is right. Consider what's right and consider what's wrong. Base your position on that principle and not personal, petty, partisan preferences.
Jim emails the show after Richmond, Virginia. Duval is increasingly an outlier on the monuments issue. I can't think of any other large city where the Confederate flag has been flown by a plane over large events, he says. Let's take one more call. Nancy in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Nancy.
Morning, Melissa. I'm calling with the same comment I made last time Ben was on your program, which is not everyone will agree with Ben Frazier. However, in the 60s, we needed Gloria Steinem and Bella Abzug, as strident and argumentative as they were. We needed them to keep the women's movement moving. It did not get all that it was supposed to get. We did not make all the advances that we wanted to. But without those women who were argumentative and strident and everything else, we wouldn't have gotten to where we are right now. And that's why we need Ben Frazier. He's a blessing to the community. Agree with him or not. Thank you.
Nancy,
thank you very much.
You know, Ben, you have been vocal for many years. You have been a squeaky wheel. And now you're dealing with health problems and facing, once again, the prospect of going to jail to fight for this cause. As I've watched your activism over the years, it seems to me that you've reached the conclusion to damn the torpedoes, that there's nothing left to lose. You're going for broke.
Precisely, and I like that quote. Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. This is conflict, and it happens throughout the history of this country. We were born in conflict. That's what America is all about. I'm all for democracy. I stand up for what is right. I'm not here to raise hell for the sake of raising hell, but I think we should be solution-oriented. We're not trying to erase culture of collard greens, cornbread, mac and cheese, fish and grits. I like all those things. But there's a difference between heritage and Confederate heritage. These Confederate monuments have a long and toxic love affair with white supremacy. I'm suggesting this morning that it's time for a divorce. Members of the city council should have a change of heart, vote their votes based on biblical principles rather than partisan political preferences. They must decide, make a decision now, city council, stand on the right side of history and to stand on the word of God. Time for Jacksonville to repent from tyranny, racism, and oppression. It's time for change.
Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jacks. Thanks for being with us.
God bless you, and thank you for the opportunity.
We'll be right back. Keep listening.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, in the wake of Hurricane Ian, the Florida Beekeepers Association is warning us that up to 300,000 beehives around the state were destroyed. That's millions of bees. In Florida, about 60% of bees are focused on pollination, which is crucially important. What is this all about? Well, the outcome is widespread and wide-ranging effects across the country on our food supply because of the threats to bees. Sar Safra is CEO and co-founder of BeeWise. I spoke with him in today's Going Green.
Sar, good to be with you as we talk about bees. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
So tell us about the impact of Hurricane Ian on Florida's bee population. What's going on with this?
Unfortunately, it was a very dramatic and destructive effect. You know, beehives are scattered all over the fields, in the open fields. And so it doesn't take much to destroy a beehive and to essentially have the entire bee colony collapse. And so Ian had hundreds of thousands of hives that were destroyed. The formal numbers, I think, are over 400,000 colonies that were lost due to the destruction.
Wow. And can you explain why it matters so much that our bee population is threatened in this way?
So there are two stats that matter. First of all, 75% of all the fruit, vegetables, seeds, and nuts that we consume on the planet are pollinated by bees. So bees are the heart and kind of the infrastructure of our farming. You can't really have apples, tomatoes, avocados, cucumbers, almonds, cotton, coffee without bees. So that's one stat. The other stat is in the last 20 to 30 years, we have been losing our bees at a rate of 35% every year. Considering they're so important to our global food supply, we're losing the supply of our food sources. And this gap of the demand, 75% of fruit and vegetables pollinated by bees versus the supply that is disappearing at a rate of 35%, actually risks and endangers our global food supply.
Now, of course, Hurricane Ian was a hugely disruptive event, but what are some of the other stressors that are wreaking havoc on the bee population?
Unfortunately, there's quite a few. You know, when we think about COVID, for example, you know, there's one culprit, a virus, and we can kind of focus our efforts and really develop, you know, a solution. With bees, it's a plethora of issues, stressors, as you said, that amplify each other. So think about pesticides in the fields, lack of food sources, lack of biodiversity. Then there's the heat, right? Heat and cold and temperatures and global warming. And all that kind of is under the big umbrella of climate change. And these things affect the bees very negatively. Think about a bee that doesn't have food, so it's hungry. It goes out of the hive. It gets pesticides, poisoned. It comes back to its hive, and suddenly it gets too warm or too cold. It doesn't have a chance to survive.
I think concerns about biodiversity and the loss of species, it's really starting to sink into the average person, particularly after a recent conference on this in Montreal. You know, this is an issue that's becoming more and more salient for people who might not have been following it very closely. But the bee colony loss and other species, they're really at great risk. I guess I'm concerned that people aren't going to realize how serious this is until they really start to suffer individually, until the average person really feels it in their daily life. What can we do to make people more aware and you know, get them to understand that this is really happening? Climate change, extreme weather, other things are making our food supply and our biodiversity stressing them, and it could lead to really negative outcomes for human beings.
You know, Melissa, this is a very true point. You know, think about it this way. When we think about global warming or climate change, our natural tendency is usually to think about carbon in the air, you know, ocean acidification, rising sea levels, and so on. These things, we will see their effects. We're seeing them now, but we'll see really dramatic effects in the next 50 to 100 years. That's what the scientists are telling us. At a 35% colony loss, every year all around the globe. Actually, in Florida, it was 47% last year. That means for every two hives, one will collapse. At these rates, we will be losing our bees in 20 to 25 years. We will be at the point of no return. At that point, buying a tomato will cost you $100. We'll have a tomato for dinner on a Friday to celebrate the weekend. And that's when people will start really feeling the effect. Actually, even if you go to the grocery store today, any one of us, you can see the fluctuating prices of buying things like avocados, even tomatoes and cucumbers. The prices are just increasing all the time.
That really brings it home, $100 tomato. That's a good way, I think, to help people really get this.
You know, it's funny to think about it today, but if it happens to us, I mean, we'll be in a pickle, so to speak.
Yeah. So what's your advice then for people who understand this issue, they're concerned, and they want to do what they can to be part of solutions?
So I'll say that, you know, again, we're focused on the bees, and so I'll give kind of advice on how to really save the bees. Biodiversity is key, meaning that bees need a lot of different food sources because different plants, different crops grow different times of the year, and when they flower, that's actually the food source of the bees, the nectar in the flower and the pollen. And so usually trees flower for a month and a half, but when they're not flowering, it's a desert for bees. But when you have significant biodiversity, a lot of different plants in the same place, then you'll have flowers all year long. This is important. So if you have a garden, if you have a backyard, plant different types of, you know, crops or trees or plants, not for the bees, but like you said, for all the types of flies and animals, that even you know, not only birds or bees, really every type of animal needs food sources all year long. So thinking, just having that awareness to biodiversity when we deal with nature is important. And that alone can help solve a lot of the problems.
Great advice. Sar Sofra, CEO and co-founder of BeeWise. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Mayo Clinic. If you're looking for answers no one else has been able to find, and it's time to get some certainty once and for all, you know where to go. Mayo Clinic. More at mayoclinic.org/Florida. The Florida Forum Speaker Series, benefiting Wolfson Children's Hospital, welcomes 11-time Olympic medalist Allison Felix on January 18th, presented by the Women's Board. Information at thefloridaforum.com or 202-2886.
Hear from keynote speakers Ralph Smith and Sony Manzano at Teach on Saturday, February 25th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront, Jacksonville. Early bird tickets are available for $40 until January 15th. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
Join me, Dr. Joe Servin, for What's Health Got to Do With It, a weekly program that examines where and how healthcare intersects with your daily life. Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 9 p.m. on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robin Young. A professor has created a university in Bangladesh for women from countries where education for women is limited. And now many women are applying from Afghanistan.
We are in a part of the world where there are more challenges for women to access education at any level and certainly at higher education.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Lawmakers from both sides say the president's latest action on border enforcement is nothing more than a Band-Aid. The Biden administration wants to reduce the number of people trying to enter the U.S. illegally, but those making the journey won't be easily deterred.
Their idea is, I'm going to go to the border, I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to help my family.
What is about to change? That story next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new year, And so, for our long-running monthly book club here on the show, new ideas for reading this January from books in the news, titles you love or maybe love to hate, and more. Our leader, Stacey Goldring, is on the line. Hey, Stacey, good morning. Oops, there you are. Hey, Stacey. Didn't press the button. Hey, Stacey.
Good morning.
Hey,
good
morning. You know, we're talking books on the very day that this highly anticipated book, Prince Harry's memoir, Spare, is released. So I know that's one book a lot of people might be reading, but there are so many other books to talk about.
Yeah, and as far as Spare is concerned, I am just going to follow, the Queen's dictum of never complain, never explain. So moving forward, my dear Melissa, I want to talk to you about, I was so inspired by your last segment, and, it was like squirrel. So I just want to add, because it was such an incredibly important segment, that if anyone wants to find out more about what you can do right now, besides stop spraying your yard immediately, to help the bees, I would read anything by Doug Tallamy, T-A-L-L-A-M-Y, or E.O. Wilson, or of course, wonderful Rachel Carson, or Barbara Kingsolver. Mm-hmm. So just to play on that last segment, which was just phenomenal, I just had to, of course, give my two cents. Can't help it. Thank you for that.
Yeah, Rachel Carson, really Silent Spraying was like the original book that started it all in terms of environmentalism. Okay, great. So what else is on your mind for reading this month?
Well, I just was looking back on the year. It's been a crazy few years. And as we move forward, I just want to take a moment and pause and say that nothing beats being back in person to discuss books. I have an online book club as well, which is wonderful, and people can come from anywhere to discuss books. But I'm just so appreciative to be back in person. And, with everything going on in China and the surge in COVID, I'm just so hopeful and so appreciative every time I can sit around a table with others and discuss books, because, it just fosters a sense of community and camaraderie that I just appreciate. So I just wanted to put that out there. And secondly, I have to chuckle because this year there were two books up into the recent publication of The Spare. Anyway, there were two books that kept popping up in the news, which just gave me a chuckle. And one was The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight by Jimmy Breslin. This came out in 1969 and was also a film, so that may ring a bell that way. And it's based on the life of mafia boss Joe Gallo. And I have to chuckle because, we've had so many serious things happen. But this title came up repeatedly, Melissa, during the Capitol insurrection hearings, in reference to election deniers and trying to, count the votes again and again and again. And this, The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight, is basically kind of a Keystone Cops look at the life of mafia boss Joe Gallo. So that is on my summer to-do list when it comes to reading. Secondly, and you're very familiar with this title because you own a copy, is Nora Ephron's book, Heartburn.
Yes.
Because evidently a little tussle there. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
This is about Olivia Wilde's. She evidently made Nora Ephron's famous salad recipe. As
salad
a
dressing.
Kind of,
yes.
Yes. Sorry, salad dressing recipe.
I'm sorry. You're right. It was the whole salad. This is a silly thing to
no worries.
Go
no
back
worries.
And forth about,
no
but go
no
ahead.
Worries. Yeah, no worries. Well, evidently there was a bit of cheating going on between Jason Sudeikis. Is it Sudeikis? I don't know.
Sudeikis.
His name, but you know the guy. Thank you. And this recipe, well, you got to read the book, but if revenge is on your mind, or you like revenge, a dish best served kind of slimy and cold, then I suggest you grab yourself 2 tablespoons of Grey Poupon, 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar, 6 tablespoons of olive oil, whisk briskly, and then do what come may regarding your life and revenge.
Nice.
So I'm just going to leave it at that. And if you check out Instagram, Nora Ephron, heartburn salad dressing
That's
recipe,
right.
you will get, as Paul Harvey said, the rest of the story.
The rest of the story. Now, we're almost out of time, but quickly, you in your next book club will be discussing James Herriot's All Creatures Great and Small. PBS is airing the third season of a reboot of that classic TV series.
Exactly. And I'd like to say I planned this, but I didn't. But anyway, the book is phenomenal. I absolutely love this book. Cannot recommend it enough. Please come join me at San Marco Books and More. Come February. Everything is on the website, chapterendnotes.com. Join me for this wonderful discussion. Check out Jack's PBS. Watch the series. Find the old 1970s series, you know, buried somewhere on the interweb and watch that too. And then we can all get together this summer, Melissa, and we can take a field trip to the Yorkshire Dales and we can go walk the James Herriot Trail. How's that?
Oh, that sounds pretty good, actually. That sounds like a good trip. And you can drop Stacy a line with book ideas at bookclub@wjct.org. Stacy Goldring, Happy New Year. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Always a pleasure.
And thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.